The 5-year-old version of you was worthy. The 12-year-old version of you who was sexually abused is worthy. The 21-year-old version of you who experienced domestic violence is worthy. The 30-year-old you who struggled with addiction is worthy. Every version of you is worthy.
You're listening to Alchemical Voices, a podcast exploring the lives of BIPOC, transracial adoptees, and survivors of complex trauma. Hi, I'm Jaslyn, your host, a nurse, and trauma release practitioner, curiously observing the human experience. As a Black woman and survivor of human trafficking, I've encountered many, many hardships. On the road to recovery, I discovered that storytelling unites us at heart and is where we find healing, inspiration, and encouragement. In each episode, you will hear stories from courageous souls, and we will touch on subjects such as identity confusion, the impacts of racism, complex trauma, transracial adoption, and much more. How do we rise amid trials and tribulations? How do we invite softness into our lives? We touch on these and many other questions, so tune in to experience transformative storytelling and let's heal together. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Alchemical Voices podcast. Today, I have Valerie Olvera in the studio. Welcome, Valerie. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Jaslyn. I'm so happy to be here. And I just love what you're doing. You're giving complex trauma survivors their voice back. And that's something that trauma does. It takes our voice, choice, and power. So this is such a healing experience that you are providing with us. So I just want to give you all the praise and all the credit and just thank you that for having me on. Thank you for allowing me to be here. I'm so happy that our paths crossed.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'm so grateful that you're here. And I'm so proud of you for reclaiming your voice, reclaiming your authority. And yeah, I've been looking forward to our conversation. And I hope that when this conversation is over, that you leave feeling more confident and empowered, and that you know that you can feel this is just the beginning. Right. It's okay that I'm using my voice, and This was the first step.
Yes. Yeah. It took me so many years to reclaim my voice back. I was so ashamed of sharing my story, which we're going to go into in a little bit, but I just carried so much shame and the fear of how others are going to perceive me, how I'm going to be judged for what I did or what I've experienced. And I'm sure just a lot of other people can relate to that, but I'm excited to get to it.
Absolutely. How would you feel about jumping right into what were your fears? That shame you just shared about, what was it rooted in? Like, what are you afraid of about sharing your story?
I think I'll just go ahead and start. On January 29th, 2018, I attempted suicide I took a bunch of painkillers thinking that it was going to help numb the pain. And it did. And what made me start thinking about that was I had a friend, I was going through a hard time, extremely depressed. And I had a friend like, hey, let me give you some melatonin to help you sleep. And I was like, do you have anything to make the pain go away? And I started doing my own research and I learned taking painkillers, if you take enough, it will numb your emotional pain. And so I took just enough that it should have killed me. And so I was taken to the hospital by good friends. They were able to clear my system and I was able to survive. And then they told me, hey, you attempted suicide. I'm like, what do you mean? No, I didn't. I was just trying to get rid of the pain. I didn't even label it as a suicide attempt. It was me just trying to get rid of whatever I was experiencing because I wasn't taught how to deal with my emotions. I wasn't taught how to regulate myself. So here I am at this Christian university. And the big question that everyone wondered was, how did this perfect Christian good girl go from being happy and extroverted to this depressed and suicidal shell of a person? That was the big question. That's what I wondered myself. And what I've discovered is that I had suppressed my authentic self for so long, growing up in a religious upbringing, and then my parents having their own childhood wounds, my dad struggling with his own addiction, you know, my mom struggling with emotionally neglectful parents, and then her experiencing abuse from the hands of my father. So them having their own wounds, and top that with a high control religion. And then there's me, who became the perfect Christian good girl, who wore this mask as a protection, who was a people pleaser, a perfectionist, an overachiever. So my pain was extremely invisible. I think that's the weird part, is everyone thinks that kids who go through things, they're just like so bad and they're so aggressive. But no, I was obedient, I was quiet, and I was good, and I had good grades, and I looked the part. But deep down, I hated myself. Deep down, if I was self-harming in my bedroom, if I made a mistake, deep down, I just didn't see a purpose for my life. And it was a bunch of things that could have happened before me that accumulated, like generational trauma. It was things that happened to me, my brother bullying me for just years and years and years, and me receiving the messages that you're so stupid, you're a loser, you're ugly, you're fat, you know, all the messages that I've received caused me to shut down my voice. It caused me to be so quiet. And so now I fear that if I speak up, I'm going to be shamed again, or I'm going to be judged again. So that's where that comes from.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So the shame you felt was connected to, okay, I'm somehow wrong, and therefore I'm going to be shamed, I'm going to be criticized, I'm going to be mocked, all those things if I speak up.
Yeah, on top of like fear of rejection or fear of not being accepted, because we're human creatures. We want to be accepted by society. So it's either be authentic and risk being rejected, or just be fake and be accepted and liked. And so I decided I'd rather be faked, but I was suppressing my authentic self. And I always say suppression is synonymous with depression. That's the same thing. I suppressed my feelings and my authenticity for so long.
Absolutely. Yeah, I recognize that in my own journey too. Gabo Mate, I'm guessing you know who he is, right? Yeah. He says that we get to choose the pain from being inauthentic, or suffer the pain of being authentic, because without a doubt, some people are going to be put off by your authenticity. You are not going to be for everyone. I'm not for everyone. No one is for everyone. And I don't think that we are meant to be for everyone, you know? And just hearing him say those words, I was like, oh, wow. It hurts no matter what. If you're inauthentic, it hurts. If you're authentic, it hurts. Okay, I'm going to choose the pain of being authentic, because then at least I'm not hurting myself.
At least you're not self-abandoning.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was taught to trauma survivors self-abandon. They abandon themselves because they were abandoned. So I self-abandoned and people pleased for so, so long, because my mother was that. She was a caretaker. She was a people pleaser. Her grandmother was, and so on. You know, I think I'm the first woman in my family who maybe hasn't been sexually abused. My mother was sexually abused. My grandmother was sexually abused. And I'm assuming there's a line of women who've been sexually abused. And so that shame could have possibly been passed on to me, because I know my parents are still wounded, and they have not, you know, gone on their own healing journey. And so subconsciously, like, they also passed on those wounds to me. It was just to be quiet, be obedient, and that's it. Just be a good girl. Just do what everyone says. Abandon your own needs. Take care of everyone else.
Yeah, but that's also a massive burden to put on a child, and constantly have to be quote-unquote perfect.
Right.
That in itself creates a lot of suffering in a child, that you cannot like step out of the line. You know, you're a child, you're supposed to step out of the line. That's how you learn, that's how you grow.
And I was the first to step out of the line, even though I didn't have my mother's childhood. I was following in her footsteps, which I've seen a lot of my clients tell me who have kids. They'll say things like, I'm an empowerment coach and an ex-therapist, by the way, and a self-healer guide. I should have shared that in the beginning. So a lot of my clients will share that I see my children and they're acting like me when I was their age and they haven't been through anything that I've been through. And I was started becoming my mother. I hadn't been through anything she had been through, but I was just following in her footsteps as the caretaker, as the people pleaser, as the Christian good girl.
Yeah. Was it John Bowlby, father of attachment, that said, "We do as we've been done by." So as we spoke about before recording, you said, I haven't been sexually abused. I haven't experienced this and this and this. No, that's all true. But what you did experience was a mother that was submissive, a woman, a role model that was submissive, that was not in her power, that did not stand up for herself, that didn't speak her truth. And you... there was also this pressure on you that you had to be a certain way. So you just did what was, you know, done to you.
What was being modeled for
me. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't have a woman in my life who was in her power, in her purpose, who spoke her truth, who believed she was worthy and valuable. Like, I'm becoming that for myself. You know, I'm becoming that for little me. Like, little me would be so proud to see the woman that I'm becoming. And even like, I still have a great relationship with my parents, so I'm having conversations with my mom as well. And so I think she's starting to learn because she's seeing me start to step in my power and use my voice. And to this day, she's a people pleaser and she'll be all resentful. I'm like, Mom, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do, you know? Society conditioned women that way. But I was like, no, fuck no, not me. I'm going to be authentic to myself. I can still be kind and loving and compassionate and still have boundaries, and I can be kind, loving, and compassionate and still serve others. I'm just not doing it at the expense of my own needs.
Yeah, I love how you eloquently put that. I think that we in general have this misunderstanding of boundaries that seems to be very difficult for many of us, and I think that's for many reasons. But also, people misunderstand boundaries as if it's doing harm unto others and it's being a bitch, it's being an asshole. No, you know what? My boundaries are not about anyone else than me, about me protecting my energy.
It's to protect ourselves. It's not our responsibility to manage someone else's emotional well-being. It's just not on us. And a lot of my clients and myself will be called things like, we're being cold or mean or a bitch or an asshole. But I'm gonna walk away if I, when you get in touch with your intuition and when you become addicted to protecting your peace and energy right away, like, you know, oh, that didn't sit right with me. I'm gonna leave this conversation now. You know, right away. But as trauma survivors, and what I see in my own clients and what I've seen in myself in the past, is we'll let that conversation keep going. We'll take all of it. We'll let people walk all over us. We'll try to fight for ourselves. And, you know, and that's okay, you know, to have a voice. But at one point, when is it time just to walk away and protect your peace, protect your energy? There's no point in trying to explain to someone to try to treat you better. Walk away, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And yes, trauma survivors, is just, it's a journey, you know, it's a part of reclaiming ourselves, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Would you like to share a little bit more about, so like, your childhood, what went on in your home, what did what was the dynamic like between your mother and father, and what did you pick up from it? And
yes, I can definitely share. I always start off my journey as an infant, because as an infant, my dad was on the run from the police. And so we laugh about it now, but my dad was not there when I was born, and he had to sneak into the hospital to see me. First 2 years of my life, my father was in prison, And so I think that was my first abandonment, even though I don't consciously remember. All I know is I didn't have a father that was holding me. And my dad said he's never changed a diaper of mine. And so I just wonder how in an infant, how that affected me. And then my mom being a single mother of four kids, I had three older brothers, and then her trying to provide for the family while her baby daddy and husband is in prison. I can only imagine what my first year of life was like. I know my mom worked a lot. She was kind of a workaholic. So I just imagine she probably went to work right away, and because she was trying to provide, she was doing the best she could with what she had and what she knew. I can honestly say that for my parents. I know not many people can say that because their parents were abusive intentionally. But I know my mom, she was just trying to survive. She was just living in survival mode with this infant, which was me. And so I think that's where my abandonment wound started. And my insecure attachment started, and I leaned toward, you're familiar with attachment styles, right?
Yeah.
I leaned very much towards anxious. I'm very anxiously attached. And so that's what my first couple years of life was probably like. I was probably going from daycare to daycare, or family member to family member, or my brothers were probably taking care of me and just trying to also caregive. They were probably put in that caretaker role. My brothers were also really rebellious, and they kind of did drugs and they were in gangs, so they were rebellious. And on top of all of that, I think around the age of maybe my earliest childhood memories, I just have memories of my dad and my mom arguing, and I can't remember for sure if there was physical violence. Like I think I blocked out some things as a child, and my memories just play tricks on me. And so I just remember there was possibly some physical violence when my dad came out of prison, and then my dad was still, he was still on drugs. He was still like a womanizer. He was still in that lifestyle. And then I just remember that sometimes we would go visit him, and he put me around, you know, some of his women that he was talking to at the time. And then around the age of 7, my dad moved back in with us, and my parents lived in separate rooms. And I was also very confused. For me, it was like a dream come true. It was because I was like, oh, mommy and daddy are back together. But they lived in separate rooms at first, and then they started, you know, sleeping together and everything. But I don't remember them being happy together. I don't have a lot of memories of them kissing and hugging. I just remember things were very chaotic, and there was a lot of arguing in the house. I didn't really feel safe in the house. I don't know if there was physical violence at this point. I don't think there was any more because my dad had been sober for a while now. So he had been sober. I just know there was a lot of arguing and a lot of chaos. And me as a child, I of course, I just want mommy and daddy to get along. I didn't want anything else. But I kind of blocked it out, and I would just numb myself, go to my room, listen to music. At first, I would fight them. I'm like, I would try to get them to make up. I would be that peacemaker who would get in the middle of it, like, hey guys, you know, I was that peacemaker in my whole entire family. My brothers really didn't care. They were doing their own thing. They had their little, you know, rebellious phases. But because I saw my brothers were being rebellious, and then my parents were arguing a lot, I just felt like I had to be the golden child. I was just going to be the good one in my family. So my mom didn't have anything to worry about. I don't know if I ever saw my mom truly happy. I just remember praying to God when I was little. I was like, God, can you please make my mom happy? And that affects a child. When you see your mom unhappy, when you see her people pleasing and caretaking of other people and in healthy relationships, we internalize that and think that's how life is supposed to be. And so we'll repeat that behavior. And so I don't remember seeing my mom happy that much. I'm sure I have good childhood memories. I'm sure there's many of them, but my mind doesn't remember them because there was so much chaos and so much fighting and so much arguing. And then it got better as time went on, or I just forgot about it or numbed it out and kind of just go to my room, put on my headphones, and just gave up. I was like, they're just going to do what they're going to do. It has nothing to do with me. And then in school, I was also on top of all this. I was raised in a religion called Pentecostal. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was raised Pentecostal. So I was raised going to church. My mom would take me and my youngest brother. My oldest two brothers, they're 15, 14, 15 years older than me. And then so it was like me and my brother were like 2 years apart. So it'd be us two and then my mom. It was always like just us three, like against the world, because my brothers were so much older than us. And so we would go to church every Sunday. And my mom was, she was just one of those people who would worship God in church and like yell at us when we get home. So it was just like one of those dynamics. I'm like, I go to church, but I'm not really seeing God in home. You know, what's going on? Y'all are always fighting. You know, doesn't Christianity talk about having peace with other people? But okay. So I received that message. And then on top of like receiving messages that, oh, I just want to say before I go into talking about religion, I still have a relationship with God and everything. I just don't have a relationship with religion or the church at the moment. But I just want to say that I can have both. I can have a relationship with God and not identify as religious before I start talking about religion, because that's a whole other thing. I don't know if we'll have time for that. And so on top of all that, I was raised Pentecostal, and so that was perfect for me, already wanting to be the golden child, already wanting to be the good girl. Then now I had all these rules that I had to follow so I could prove that I'm worthy, that I'm enough, and that I'm valuable. And so my parents would be proud of me, so they wouldn't have anything to worry about. And so I just remember thinking, I need to follow all these rules. And if I don't follow the rules, that means I'm bad. And so anytime I would make a mistake, and to this day, if I make mistakes, I'm extremely hard on myself. I'm not sure where I got that message. Because there are good messages that could come from church, but maybe my mind was just focused on the negative messages. If I mess up, I'm a sinner. If I mess up, I'm bad, or I'm unworthy and I'm not enough. And so I was receiving all those messages, internalizing all of my environments. And so then going into like middle school and high school, I was the perfectionist. I got really good grades. I was a people pleaser, a caretaker. I was just one of those girls who seemed really happy on the outside, but I was really depressed on the inside, and I was very anxious. I was very high functioning anxiety. So no one thought there was anything wrong with me. Not that there was anything wrong with me in the first place, but no one thought like, oh, is Valerie okay? Because I made it seem like I was just perfect and happy. And maybe there were a part of me that truly was. Maybe a part of me did truly, you know, have the joy of the Lord. And I found, you know, strength in some of my faith. But deep down, I didn't like myself. Deep down, I was so insecure. Deep down, I was struggling with unhealthy body image issues. Deep down, sometimes some days I would starve myself because I wanted to be skinny. And deep down, I felt like I had to be perfect, and if I wasn't perfect, then I wasn't enough. And so those were all the subconscious limiting beliefs and patterns that I was internalizing and that I am still unlearning today. I would say I've unlearned a lot of them, but healing is a lifelong journey. And then when I got to college, and I went to a Christian university as well. I went to a Pentecostal university. And is it okay if I say the name? Okay, I don't mind saying what it is. I know sometimes when people go on podcasts or they write their books, they're very discreet. Like, don't say names, school, places, whatever, but I don't really care calling it out. So the name of the school I went to is Southwestern Assemblies of God University, and is now known as Nelson University. And so I am just now, 7 years later, understanding how going there has affected me. While there, I do have good memories going to this university, I also have memories where I was told that I need to cover up so I don't cause men to sin, which is really annoying. That's really fucked up, you know?
It's very fucked up.
Why am I responsible for men's thoughts? And there was just a lot of rules at this university that, honestly, for me at the time, I felt comfortable following because I had already been the good girl. And people going to this university, they also were good child. They were also, you know, they were the PKs and the MKs, pastor's kids and missionary kids. So we thought that was normal. Here we are, 18, 19, 20 years old, still being told what to do, what to wear. We had to go to chapel 5 times a week. Every Sunday, we had to sign out to go to church. If we missed church 2 Sundays in a row, then we got like written up. If we didn't go to chapel, Then we would get on chapel probation. I was told I couldn't have my nose piercing at the gym. I was told I had to wear big and long t-shirts so my butt wouldn't show. So guys, don't look at my butt, you know, because I can control that. And that was a similar message I had growing up as well. Like, I was just taught just to be ashamed of my body and just to cover up. Like, I remember getting in trouble if my clothes were too tight or my shorts were too short or if my shoulders were showing. And I do have memories where I did wear and do those things, but I always remember it was always followed up with some comment by my dad or my mom. And maybe that was because of my mother's, you know, her own sexual trauma, or just my dad, you know, he was in prison with men. So I can only imagine, like, they did fear for me and they did try to protect me from that. And yes, those things happen, but I'm not going to cover up to make people more comfortable. That's me suppressing again my authentic self.
Yeah, I was just about to say that would just be you, you know, molding yourself into being a certain person, showing up a certain way to appease others. So once again, you would not be your authentic expression. It would be an expression out of survival and what others needs. And it's so messed up when this happens to young women, where we are programmed to believe, oh, I'm responsible for, you know, being sexually harassed or raped or whatever, is because of my clothing or whatever. It's such a, I don't even have any word for it. I think it's horrible, and it's deeply problematic, because that shame, it sits with you for a long time.
I felt so much shame for my body, and that has fed into my body image issues I already had and unhealthy eating habits I already had. And you mentioned sexual harassment, and it gets better. I've never been sexually harassed more than I was at this Christian university.
Oh.
I remember this. I had a guy friend who told me his other guy friend made a joke about raping me. And then I told my RA, the resident assistant, who's like the head of our dorm, and my guy friend got mad at me. What did I do wrong? You're the one who didn't stand up for me when your friend over here is making jokes about raping girls.
Yeah. What is that even about? Joking about raping someone? Like, that's not even, I mean, why would you ever joke about something so horrific? That confuses me.
I don't understand why, and I don't understand why no one called him out on his shitty behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked out a lot, and so I just remember hearing comments here and there from some of the members, specifically, like, my dorm had a lot of athletes, and I remember hearing from another friend guys in the lobby talking about my body. I remember walking, and then this guy thought it was appropriate to say, "Damn girl, your ass is getting thicker by the day." And me just being little Miss Nice Girl and good girl, I was like, "Oh, thank you."
Yeah.
That's not okay.
No.
Yeah. So just things like that I tolerated and thought was normal. But I'm also, like, this Christian university and growing up in purity culture, these guys were probably also brought up religious, and that sexual expression was suppressed. And so then it gets manifested as this because it was suppressed so much. That's my theory, I think. I think that's why a lot of Christian men struggle with porn addiction or infidelity, just like all men. But I just see it a lot too in religious, with anyone who grew up religious. It's just very suppressed. And then there's purity culture and modest is hottest. And so I grew up in that era, and it's taken me years to understand, like, how much it has actually affected me to this day. I noticed I was wearing really big t-shirts to the gym, and then I would take it off and I'd stay in the girls' gym. And then I noticed that I'm thinking about guys looking at me. And guys are probably just paying attention to their workout. Okay. Like, I'm constantly thinking, are they looking at me? Are they looking at me? Not that I want that attention, but It's because I was programmed to make sure I do everything to not get that attention. But then I'm always having to worry about what other people are thinking. That's not a way to live. That's living in survival. That's living in fear. And so it's literally just recently, Jaslyn, I'm just coming out. Okay, I can wear a sports bra and it's okay. Like wearing a big t-shirt, it's actually kind of uncomfortable. Like I want to, if that's what I want to wear, then I'll wear a big t-shirt. If I want to wear a sports bra, I'll wear a sports bra and that be okay. And I don't have to be ashamed for that. And that's crazy because people who didn't grow up religious wouldn't understand how big of a deal that is for me.
No, I actually get it, even though I was not raised that way. I get the confusion, and I get the need to show up in certain ways out of fear of, if I don't show up in this way, then what will happen? What will XYZ think? What are the consequences going to be like? Because there was always this expectation that things had to be in a certain way. And if there wasn't, you know, then you, like, you know, you would be shamed. Something would be said. And so I get that.
Okay.
And I think it's very problematic, because one thing is, okay, so we experience it in our childhood, but this is not only childhood, it's also societal, you know, and we women do it to each other. I've observed it. You know, I was once told, you cannot go on a date with that red lipstick without delivering the message that you are going to put out. And I was like, excuse me? I was so confused. And at that time in my life, I was a shell of a human. So I was just like, wait, what? Is this really true? Wait, if someone said that to me today, I would be like, I'm wearing this lipstick. And if he perceives it in a certain kind of way, that's on him. And he's going to be disappointed when I leave and don't put out, you right. know? So I think it's very problematic when we do it to each other too.
Yeah. Yeah. And the girl, the RAs were programmed to do that to us. Like they're the ones dress coding us. They're ones telling me I need to take out my nose ring. They're the ones saying that my shorts are too short. So they were just programmed that way and they didn't see a problem with that.
No. So the problem is that we get to be the cycle breakers, we get to be the system disruptors, and that's not always a fun role to have, because that's when you actually get to be on the receiving end of finger pointing and judgment. Why do you have that ring in your nose? Why are you wearing those shorts? Why are you wearing that lipstick? You know, and that can be extremely triggering. I don't know what your experience is, but when you started doing what was right for you, what did you experience?
I did feel bad, honestly. I didn't tell my parents about my nose ring, and then they found out and I got in trouble. So, but it is freeing and liberating. And I think that's a healing experience too, is just to do those things and express yourself authentically. And so now I can dress authentically. I can get piercings and tattoos. I don't have tattoos, but that's also frowned upon in my family a little bit, even though my brother has some tattoos, but it's still a taboo thing. I'm like, why? No, let's be authentic. Let's stop conforming to these rules that were put on us.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Rules that are on a societal level, just, you know, you don't have to bring them into your home.
No.
And raise your kids by, you know, societal standards. Not at all. That's my conviction anyway.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to have kids so I can tell her she can wear what she feels good in, wear what she feels comfortable in. But yeah, here I was at this Christian university. I'm not gonna lie, I was having a good time. I was experiencing freedom from my parents, but it's like I escaped a prison and went to another prison, but I didn't think of it that way because it felt comfortable and it felt safe. Like there was a curfew and then guys couldn't be in girl dorms. Like there was this one day, I think out of the month, where guys were allowed to go to the girl rooms and then we had to leave the door open. It was just like silly things. Like we were literally adults being treated like children. But I thought like, oh, that's so cool. And then what happened, what really triggered the suicide attempt, which is something I don't talk about much because it is another thing that brought me shame, is first of all, like I think I kissed one boy at this point. I also wasn't allowed to date, or I've turned down a lot of guys because I'm like, well, you're not in my religion. I can't date you, I can't do anything, and I'm saving sex for marriage, and so we're not going to be doing that. So I've only kissed one boy at this point and still hadn't kissed anyone yet, but I got really close to this guy and we were spending a lot of time together, and it never got physical, but we both expressed that we had feelings for each other. And there were times where we did get just way too close. I would say it was like an emotional affair. We were just sharing so much with each other. So we were being so vulnerable. And I think when he did not choose me, I perceived that as a rejection. I perceived that as a betrayal because he wanted this other girl who is also my best friend, and she was like a better version of me. I told myself the story that she was a better version of me, that I wasn't enough, that I wasn't worthy, that and that's what triggered the depression, that's what triggered the suicide attempt. And the reason why I don't share that story a lot, because it wasn't necessarily about them. I was already broken. Not that I was broken, but I was already fractured. And then when this happened, I felt even more fractured. It's like it took one more crack for me to break. And that was the crack that needed to happen for me to break and then for me to come into my power. So it needed to happen. It was necessary, but I didn't respond as someone who didn't experience trauma would have. I responded if it was a regular person, I don't want to say normal, but if it was just a person who hadn't experienced any trauma or any abandonment or rejection, they would have just been like, oh man, that sucks and that hurts, and moved on. But for me, I had put this guy on a pedestal. I'd made him like a god, like, oh my gosh, we're gonna get married, he's the best, I can't live without him. And when I did that, when he left, it felt like a hole in my heart, because I was using this guy to fill a void in my heart. And I see that I do subconsciously like male attention, like male validation, but I never went out of my way to get it because that was frowned upon. I wasn't allowed to date until I was 18. And so I was like, oh, now's my time. I can date. I'm going to date this guy. Then we're going to get married. Everything's going to be great. And he's just so amazing when he's just a ordinary, regular guy, nothing that special about him. So that's what triggered the depression, and that's what triggered something inside of me that I didn't realize was there. And to this day, I wonder what it was. Was it like a perceived betrayal? Was it because, my dad cheated on my mom, and so maybe I thought it was like a similar dynamic? Maybe it was because of the father wound I had at an infant, and I perceived this as abandonment, and that triggered something in me. To this day, I just dwell on it and think about it. But the why is not so important. The important part is that I did what I did, felt what I needed to felt, I healed what I needed to heal, and I moved forward. And not that that journey is like ever over, but I moved on from it, and that's why I'm sharing my story now, so people will be inspired that they can share their story as well. So that's what triggered everything. I don't have communication with those two people anymore, and they're living their life. So yeah.
So this was your best friend and the man that you were in love with, or this young man you were in love with,
Yeah.
and they ended up together. And yeah, okay, wow, that I think that would be painful for anyone. But Do you want to hear what I think? The abandonment wound. The fact that he didn't want you was perceived as a rejection, which you also experienced as a little girl. You know, your father wasn't there. That wound can get triggered and activated when we experience something similar to our childhood. So if we felt like we had an unavailable parent or felt rejected by our parent, or if they do leave us, we feel that same pain all over again. And I think that's what you experienced.
Like the pain of me not having my father as an infant and toddler was all brought back up again. Wow. Yeah. That's what I thought on top of like the generational wound of just like how my dad experiencing depression and suicidal thoughts after his brother died by suicide, and just also several members of my family like struggled with this. I believe my mom's also been depressed most of her life because she's also suppressed herself. And so just so many different things. But like I said, the why is not important. But the thing is that abandonment wound got triggered. And I always tell my clients that all it takes is one triggering event for everything just to come back up to the surface. A lot of the times that's a divorce, that's a breakup, that's a loss, a job loss, big move. It's just one singular event. Everything comes back up to the surface, and then you're here. It's like drowning. And that's how I felt. I was drowning. The girl I knew, the perfect Christian good girl, I didn't know who she was anymore. I had to find myself because that wasn't my authentic self. And so that's when I really, really delved deep into my pain. And one thing I'm good at is I'm really good at feeling. I let the floodgates just open. And I don't recommend this for everyone, but just for me, I'm very empathetic and very I don't want to say sensitive either. I think I'm just okay with tolerating the discomfort of the emotions because that's the reason why I had attempted suicide is because I didn't want to tolerate the discomfort. But how I was going to heal is I was going to learn to tolerate that discomfort. And so I let it all in, whatever messages, subconscious belief, whatever void I was feeling, I just let it all in. I let it sit and I let it out. I released it as much as I could. And that's when I started therapy. I was strengthening my relationship with God. I had so many people who were coming to me and just like prophesying over my life, speaking positive messages. I mean, I'm still in this religious institution and university, but I also had a lot of people who were there to support me and my relationship with God, and not necessarily my relationship with religion, because again, I was still in that like kind of prison that I didn't even think about at the time. So that's when I started to heal. I started to feel everything. I was already going to school to become a therapist at this point, and so I knew like that I was going to dive deep into self-development books and podcasts. And so that was 7 years ago, and here I am today. Of course, healing's a lifelong journey, but I can honestly say now, today, I love myself. I respect myself. I know myself. I'm confident in who I am. And I will always be learning and growing, but not from a place that I'm not enough, but from a place of unconditional love for myself. That's what I always try to assure my clients because we definitely can get caught in this self-development trap where we keep wanting to learn and keep wanting to grow because subconsciously we feel that we're not enough. Subconsciously, we think if we learn and grow and know more information, we're gonna be worthy. When I just tell all my clients that the 5-year-old version of you was worthy, the 12-year-old version of you who was sexually abused is worthy, the 21-year-old version of you who experienced domestic violence is worthy, the 30-year-old you who struggled with addiction is worthy. Every version of you is worthy. And so we can dive into self-development. Yes, we can still learn, grow, and heal and evolve and everything. But now we're doing it from a place of unconditional love, not from a place of lack. And so that's where I am at today, is just trying to unlearn that, because for a long time I did do it coming from a place like I'm not enough. I need to keep growing. I need to keep healing. I just need to be this perfect girl. I need to be this perfect therapist, this perfect coach, when no, I don't need to be perfect. I'm human. I can be vulnerable. I can be raw. I can be authentic, and I can still help others do the same. I can still help others heal their childhood wounds and also let them know, like, hey, this is this is a lifelong journey. I just want to get you to a point where you feel empowered and you feel confident to take on this journey on your own. And if you want to come back, I will always be here.
That's so beautiful. I loved everything you just said. And a realization I recently had, and something I tap on daily, is understanding, getting that younger part of me to understand, I am inherently good enough. I am inherently worthy and deserving of good things. And there is nothing I have to do, because I already am, you know, worthy. And it was such a, it's such a big shift in mindset, you know, realizing, oh, wow, I actually don't have to do anything to be enough, you know. But I think it's very, common when you have childhood trauma, when you've been mistreated, or if you've experienced misattunement, that you obviously you jump to conclusions, then it must mean there's something wrong with me. Then it must be because I'm not good enough. And without you knowing, that truth gets layered in your subconscious, and that's where you live your life from.
Our subconscious really is driving our lives. And I still am feeling that subconscious belief that I'm not worthy, that I'm not enough. And I had, I think, an experience today. Well, every day I do an inner child visualization, and we go to my safe place, and I have like a door, and then whatever version of my inner child wants to walk through that door, and we just talk and we just hang out. And we were just having a conversation about what we're talking about right now is worthiness. And I was just thinking, like, I'm just doing too much. Like, I don't have to do more to feel worthy. And that goes with like my personal life. And even in my business, I felt like I just have to keep doing and being overproductive or be better. I don't know, grow more and I'll be enough. And I think I received that message as a child. Well, I internalized my, you know, the religious experience. I internalize that and just need to follow these rules and then I'll be enough. And so that's still living with me. I'm still healing that wound. I'm never fully perfect or evolved, but we did have, like, me and my inner child, we did have a good conversation about that though. And so I just reminded her that she is worthy, that she is enough, that she doesn't have to do anything else or be anything else or provide anything else or give to anyone else, that she is just worthy just as she is. Because even me doing what I do as a, as an empowerment coach and former therapist, self-healer guide, I think sometimes as these healers, we're sometimes also coming from a place of lack. If I can just help these people heal, then I'll be good enough. If I can give them the results, then I'll be good. Then I'll have worth. No, that's their healing journey. You're responsible for your own healing journey. You are just their guide. And so I noticed I was coming from that place, and I always have to just consciously remind myself and also heal that subconscious wound continuously and find proof that we are worthy, find proof that we're enough.
I so resonate with everything you just said. I recently had do you know what Human Design is?
I've heard of it, yes.
I think it's like gene keys, they call it, something like that. Anyway, because my friend is in training to become a human design reader. And what she told, one of the many things she told me is that you're already living your purpose by what you're doing with this podcast, all this about survivor empowerment, alchemizing pain into power, all these things. This is a part of your makeup and what you're here to do. And it was just like, what? I don't understand. I was so surprised, but it also in a good way, because I was like, I had this narrative in my head that I had to be like this, look like this, live like this, be in this state in my life. And I'm none of those things. So how can I be living my purpose? And it just hit me after that reading. Oh, I don't have to have all my shit together. I don't have to have a certain body size. I don't have to look a certain way. I don't have to be doing certain things. It can be good enough as it is. And maybe we're not meant to have our shit together, quote unquote. And maybe we can't have it all. Do you get what I mean? Yeah. So I also think that we have a tendency to tell ourselves a story about how things should be or what they should look like before things are okay, when I don't think that's reality. That's what I'm understanding.
Yeah, I deeply resonate with that as well, because I'm sure you have all these dreams, goals, and aspirations being in this field, and I do as well. And we think, oh, once we get there, we'll be good. But we're good now because you are actively walking your purpose and your power. I am actively walking in my purpose and my power. And I feel that and I see that daily. Like, I have more peace and joy more than depression, anxiety. Although those things come up still, and self-doubt and procrastination, all those things can still resurface. But the most of the time anyways, the peace and joy is there because I'm actively walking in my purpose. I'm walking in my power and good things are ahead of me. You know, everything is working out for your good. Your success is inevitable. And you're just going to continue to grow from here, not because you think you're not worthy enough as you are, but just because you love and accept yourself and met yourself where you're at right now. And so good things are going to come your way.
Yeah, I agree with you. I also have discovered that self-acceptance is really key. It's not about being perfect. It's not about being a good girl or living up to people's expectations. It's about living in alignment, and it's accepting all sides of you. So the sides that you're really proud of, and then the sides where you're like, why am I like this?
And I have so many parts of me that I'm like, why did I do that? Why did I say that? Just like those sides of me still come out. I'm like, oh, I'm just not perfect. That's okay. And I get hard on myself sometimes. I'm like, no, it's okay. We're human. We don't have to be that perfect girl anymore. You don't have to live up to anyone else's standards or expectations.
No, I mean, no one is perfect. So why should we be?
No.
You know?
Yeah. It's about accepting and meeting yourself where you're at without having to, you know, have that aggression just to change and be and do and provide and caretake.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I have a question for you. So to anyone that's listening right now, if you were to give them one piece of advice on how to start slaying shame and accepting themselves for who they are, what advice would you give them?
Let me think. That's a really good question.
Thank you.
How to slay shame and just accept yourself where you're at.
Yeah, because I feel like that's the essence of what you have been doing and what you are doing. And I think it's so beautiful. And I was just wondering if there was something you could pay forward to the listeners, then that would be beautiful.
I think the most beautiful thing you could do is to get to know yourself and just be with yourself, date yourself. And then as you continue to do that, you're going to meet so many different parts of you. And when those parts come up, you can listen to them, hold space for them, and just accept them where they're at. You don't have to change them. And I did this before we started today when I noticed I had a part coming up and that sensation was anxiety and the fear of being seen or judged or not accepted. And I didn't go straight into breath work so I could just get rid of it. I just, hey, I see you. I hear you. What do you need? Any part of you that's going to come up on this journey as you just self-discover, say those words. I see you. I hear you. What do you need? How can I hold space for you right now? I would say that's probably the number one thing, is you're going to get to know yourself by being alone with yourself. And then as you discover these parts, you're just going to be able to love and accept them and meet them where they're at.
Yeah, I agree with you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. That was so beautiful. And yeah, there's something very special and powerful when you can meet yourself where you're at and just look at yourself with compassion rather than judgment.
It's such an empowering shift to do, and
Very.
I'd love to see that in my clients as well, because I always have to redirect them and remind them, like, hey, remember, you're enough just as you are. We're doing this because you love yourself. Because when we get towards the end of our journey together, they'll keep looking for things. I'm like, if you keep looking for things that are wrong with you, you're always gonna find them because you're human. But if you look for things that are right and beautiful with you, you will always find them. So it's just having that mindset shift and then the subconscious awareness that we need to actively be looking for proof that we're right and that we're good and that we're worthy and that we're enough, because our brains have been trained for so long to look for proof that we're bad, that we're shameful, that we're just not good. Our brains were wired that way. And so when you shift from this place to a more empowering place where we actively look for proof that we're enough and that we're worthy and that we're good just as we are, it's such a powerful experience, and it's such a relief that comes to you. It's like a breath of fresh air. I'm like, oh, I can breathe. I love where I'm at. I'm gonna meet myself where I'm at, and that's okay. And you have that compassion and love and acceptance for other people as well when you have it yourself. And I noticed in my own relationship with my husband, when I'd expect him to do all these things and be all these things, that was a reflection of me. That wasn't because of him. That was me. I was being hard on myself, and I'm expecting me to meet all these standards. And so I expected him to do the same. And so I projected that onto him, and I hurt him. That's what we do. Hurt people, hurt people. We're wounded.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I love the part where you said, so when we are more compassionate and kind to ourselves, we automatically do the same. We become that way in relation to others. That's what I'm observing within myself too. And it's just such a beautiful, it's such a beautiful transformation. And it's very empowering because when you can look at yourself with compassion rather than judgment, you have your own back. You're your own supporter. You're your own cheerleader, you know? And that in itself is so empowering. It's uplifting.
It really is. And I think that's why I wish more people would go on their healing journey, because I'm like, oh man, you're missing out. Do you know what that feeling's like? It just to feel free and liberated. And I also realized that I can't be abandoned, because I'm never going to abandon myself. So for so long, I would just be afraid my husband's going to leave me or find something wrong with me and just dip. And you know what? Even if that does happen, I'm okay. Like, I've gotten to that place of self-confidence and self-love, and I want us to stay together, obviously. And you know, he's the love of my life. But I, when you get to a place like, even if he does leave me, I'll be okay. Up in the day, I love myself and I love myself. I know myself, and my success is inevitable. Then someone else will come along, you know? And so that was probably one of the hardest things that I've probably barely learned this year. Like, oh, I'm okay because I got myself, and that's great. And I have God, I have a relationship with him as well. So yeah.
And that's really, really beautiful. And I believe when you reach that level of self-reliance, then you are unstoppable, in my opinion.
Fucking unstoppable, right?
I mean, what do you have to lose? You know that you have your back and you have God. I mean, yeah, hubby is great. He's a wonderful addition. You want him there, but you also know I'm going to be okay if you're not.
Yeah. And I thought if he left, like, I would die, which is what happened with that guy. Left, felt like I was dead. That's not a healthy place to be in, that type of codependence or that place where you put someone else on a pedestal and you make them your God and you worship them and you have them fill a hole. No, my hole is filled with my relationship with myself and my relationship with God. And so I don't feel like if anyone leaves my life, I'm just gonna die and I can't live without them. Where I used to feel that way. And so, yes, I wish everyone would come to that place of self-confidence and self-reliance and self-love. And then if you're listening to this, it's absolutely possible for you, because look what happened to me. Look what happened to you. It's so possible, no matter how dark or how messy your past is. I don't care what you've been through, it's still possible for you, because you should know. You've talked to so many complex trauma survivors that there is actual proof that you can do this too. This is not just some out of touch thing, or it's not realistic. No, it's possible no matter how dark or messy your past may be.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a lot of work. You know, it's a lot of hard work. It takes a lot of effort, but it is possible. And I think that's something that we cannot say enough and remind each other of enough. It is possible. Because when you are in the darkest of the darkest, it can seem like, why am I even doing all this work? Because I'm not getting, it can feel like you're not getting anywhere. It can feel like you're just, you're deep in the mud and not going anywhere, where actually you are. Have you seen that image of two people sitting beside each other, and then it says, don't compare one person's success to your own because you don't know what they've been through. Then you see the one where the roots are not very deep, but the person is massive. And then you see the other person that's tiny, but then the roots are really, really, really deep. And obviously we want to be the one with the really deep and grounded roots, even though on the surface it doesn't look like much.
Yeah, I love that. A good reminder.
Yeah, so like give it the time. It may seem like you're not moving, but maybe that's because you're growing really, really, really deep roots. And yeah,
and eventually you're going to reap the harvest. But right now, season of growing, and then with growing comes pain.
Yeah.
And eventually you get to a point where you reap your harvest, you attract that relationship, or you get that job you wanted. Things do start coming to you. Things are starting to come in alignment for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for this beautiful conversation, Valerie. I feel like it's going to inspire so many who listen to it. You just said so many wise things. I'm really excited to see how this episode is going to be received. Is there anything you would like to end with?
I would just say, if you're listening to this, just to continue to meet yourself and love yourself where you're at. You're enough just as you are. I think that's just been a theme of today's topic. And if Jasmine can do it, if Valerie can do it, and I was depressed and suicidal and insecure, shy, quiet, good girl, who we are now, you know, these powerful, confident, self-loving women who are still wounded, but we can help heal the world one person at a time. Because when you do the inner work, you inspire so many others to do the inner work. And so the work that you do, it transcends time. It goes back in time to your ancestors. It affects the people around you in the present, and then it affects the future generations to come. So I hope you realize how monumental this work that you are doing is.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much. That was it for today. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please remember to rate Alchemical Voices and follow the community on Instagram. Until next time.